This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, a fantasy author publishing under James D. Reed. Mask of Guilt, Mask of Illumination, Book 1 is out. We all wear masks, some of us to hide our guilt. Lady Finari, lost in the malaise of depression, finds purpose with a group of all-women thieves, the Crack Gems. Intrigue, romance, betrayal, and adventure swirls around her in this epic fantasy tale. Today, I'm joined by Chris Masterson and Stephen Dutch. They are the authors of the sci-fi novel Ouroboros, History of Soul, Book 1.
How are you doing today, Chris and Stephen?
Hello, thanks for having us. I am doing very well, thanks.
And you're Chris?
Yep.
And Stephen, how are you doing? I'm stepping over you, I'm sorry.
I'm doing all right. Lovely lockdown in Sydney, so, you know.
So you're both down in Sydney, right?
We are, yes. So both confined to our houses, except for essential travel. And it's not so bad when you're a writer because it means there's a lot more opportunity to get some writing done.
It's true.
All right. So I always like to start the podcast off with a fun question or two. So does pineapple belong on pizza?
Absolutely not. That's a hard no from me.
I would have to say with jalapenos, it's really nice.
Interesting. I don't know how I feel about you, Stephen. Chris, you're doing fine.
Yes, point one for Chris.
So let's talk about your guys' novel, Ouroboros. Would you guys like to tell us a bit about it? It's a sci-fi novel. What makes it great? Who are the characters? You know, give us your sales pitch.
I'll start off if you don't mind, Steve. The story is essentially about we've got three protagonist characters. Lisa, who's the last remaining cyborg. Rainer, who is he's resigned his space fleet commission to work on a cargo ship. And a character called Dippets, some people struggle with the name, who's an orphan in search of his origins. And the story is they all pretty much end up on the same ship and are in some way, shape or form looking for the same thing. And that is answers. They want to know who is actually in control of, you know, civilization, the colonies that they live in, what are their true intentions, who can they really trust, and why is everyone trying to kill them? And that comes about because they come into possession of a rare piece or a couple of rare pieces of ancient technology that seem to be related to the destruction of the homeworld many cycles ago. And then it sort of ties into everything else that happens to them along the way. Okay. So that's pretty much the high level what it's about. And of course, being a series as well, each book or story takes them further down the rabbit hole and introduces new elements and new pieces of information for them to try and solve, decipher, and survive.
Okay. So who are our characters?
As mentioned, we have three characters. I've probably done enough talking. I'm going to let Steve talk about them in more detail. Sorry to throw you under the bus there, Steve.
No worries. So Lisa's probably one of our main protagonists, I feel. So Lisa's one of the last remaining cyborgs. There was a massive war between humanity and cyborgs as that humanity realised that cyborgs were the next iteration of humanity and they were going to destroy them. So she gets thrown onto the ship. I won't describe it all too much as it's all part of the first book. But she's basically an observer, so she's thrown on to observe the crew. And in that, she starts becoming part of the crew and starts answering some of the questions that Chris was talking about before, or asking some of the same questions.
Quite reluctantly, I might add as well. She doesn't really want to be there. She's sort of forced into the situation and is not happy about it. So that sort of adds a little bit of nice conflict there between her and the other characters.
That's true. Some of the other main characters, I mean, we actually have a lot of characters. There's about 8 people on the main spaceship Galaxy, which is like a transport cargo ship. But there's about 3, I'd say, of the main characters. The second is Dippets, who's an orphan. He's just searching for his origins. I don't want to give too much away about Dippets because it's quite a big reveal throughout the entire series. But basically, he's an orphan who's trying to figure out where he came from, why he doesn't know his parents, that kind of thing.
Why nobody loves him.
Yeah, poor Dippets. So those are the main and Rayner, sorry. Yeah, Rayner's resigned from his Space Fleet Commission. So he actually went to Flight Academy with one of the other characters called Swift, who is one of the antagonists. And he's basically trying to take a step back from all of that life and trying to run his own, trying to run the galaxy ship with Dippets. And Rob, who is another character, he's not a main character, but he's on the ship. So there is a lot of characters and a lot of things going on with the throughout the series.
One thing they all have in common, though, is that pretty much all of them have kind of their own secrets that they've got their reasons for being there, that they're all trying to run away from something or hide from something or keep a secret. And that's true for all of the characters, pretty much, not just the main characters. So there's some nice sort of conflicts and intrigue going on there between all of these different people on the one ship.
Okay, yeah, that sounds like a great story. So I'm just curious, how does co-authoring work? What is your guys' process to have you both contribute to one story?
So the way we sort of really operate is, to start with, we both work on a first draft together and we run through the whole thing together. What we end up doing is one of us will take one chapter, one another chapter, we'll write up that chapter and then both go over each other's work and adding in little bits, editing, that kind of thing. So one of the things that we're actually quite proud of, I guess, is that we quite often, it always sounds like the same voice throughout all the chapters. So it doesn't sound like it's written by 2 people. It's sort of, we're 2 heads together.
Yeah, by the end of the process, often we can't even tell who wrote what.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So do you just alternate chapters, or do you, like, I write one character and you write another character, or is it just you go, like, I get the odd chapters and you get the even chapters?
We don't really plan it. Like, I don't think there's a particular structure to it. It's more like one of us might go, you know what, I've got a really good inspiration for this chapter. I want to take first shot at it. So that's quite often sort of how we approach the writing of a particular chapter. But then, you know, the other person will go over it and potentially sometimes rewrite it. We both just go over it over and over again throughout the course of the writing and editing process. That sort of means that it's pretty much equal parts, both of our contribution to it in the end.
Okay. So sometimes we do, sometimes sort of, like, for example, one of us might start writing for one character and then we kind of get a feel for that character's arc throughout the book. So we'll kind of take lead in that, writing the perspective chapters for that character. But it's not really something we plan, I don't think. It's we've done that a couple of times, but other times we don't. We're actually just working on our 4th book at the moment. So we've gone through the whole process a couple of times.
Okay. Yeah, that's it's a little different than my co-authoring experience. Where,
oh, really?
Yeah, well, my co-author is more the idea guy for us. So he is he's not a fast writer. I think that's safe to say. Like, whereas I am, I'm one of the, I can write fast. So like, I don't know. I can do like 3,000 words an hour sometimes. So, okay. So like, he usually like, he likes, so he comes up with the stories, which are always absurd stuff that I would never come up with. Right. Cause it's, and so I'm like kind of there. He brought me in initially because he couldn't write the fantasy battle stuff. Like that wasn't really his thing, but like he read my stuff. He's like, well, like that's something, you know, I can do, right? That's like one of my talents. Where his is like coming up with our absurd stories that he sent me notes for. I mean, really absurd stuff. Like, you know, like a platypus that lives in Australia, and no one thinks it's weird that he's a platypus, is one of them. And then he goes on a wine tour and then fights zombies. It's a weird book.
Sounds interesting.
Well, as being two platypuses from Australia, I can guarantee you that that's exactly how life is like down here.
I'll be honest, though. We write, so ours is kind of meta. We're like, us as the authors are kind of, we reference ourselves in the story. And so one of our conceits is that we're dumb, like, North Americans that don't actually, we're too lazy to research Australia. So we deliberately put in a bunch of, like, stuff that shouldn't be there. As part of the joke of sort of self-effacing ourselves as authors. It's really weird. They kind of turn into meta critiques on sort of writing and storytelling and characters and, you know, and like, yeah, so it's, they kind of get meta. I think authors will get more out of them than the average reader. And I think that's my fault because Michael just, he gives me stuff and I just sort of let my brain, it's very weird because I don't have to, I just sort of let my brain like make all the dumb, so like my brain makes dumb connections all the time and they're stupid stuff, right? Like, you know, I wonder, like I'll just suddenly go like wonder dumb things, and this is stuff I would never put in my writing because it's like, you know, serious stuff, right? Like your book, right? But then this book, I'll be like, I'll just write it because it's absurd. So it's fun. It's very liberating in a certain way where I kind of get to take my filter down. But then at the same time, that means I'm also kind of putting a lot of my own thoughts on writing as I'm doing the meta stuff, I guess, and storytelling and how it all works in the creative process. And
well, it kind of raises an interesting point, doesn't it, for authors in terms of, you know, how much research do you do for a topic? You know, how far down the rabbit hole do you go, right?
Right. How far down do you guys go?
Because I've recently done some short stories on another project, and you know, I find myself researching like, you know, medical stuff or, you know, medical terminology about diseases and, you know, just other bits and pieces. And I go, you know, people spend 8 years studying degrees on this stuff, right? I'm never going to be, you know, that knowledgeable about, you know, all this medical or scientific stuff. So for me, it's just like making a compromise of doing, you know, a couple of hours worth of research just so I get the lingo and get the idea down pat, and then kind of wing it to pretend I know more than I actually do, which is probably going to upset a lot of people who are, you know, doctors and scientists reading my stuff going, this guy's an absolute hack. But, you know, when you're writing a story, you don't want to spend more time researching the field than you do writing the story, right?
Yeah, I know, so, but
it's like a trade-off that you've got to find that nice balance for, to at least look like, you know, you've done enough research to know what you're talking about, but not do a 4-year degree at the same time.
Fair enough. Yeah, I know. Like, I've listened to like people on the internet react to like professional stuff on when they cover their stuff in like fiction, how authors get it wrong. And they're like, I used to drive a bus. And so every time I see someone get hit by a bus in a TV show, it's always a bus, right? They step out into traffic and a bus just hits them. And I'm like, come on. Bus drivers are like trained with like defensive driving, and we're like, we pay attention to like pedestrians who might just step out in front of us, and we're kind of ready for it. And on the other side, that's a lot of paperwork that guy has to go through now, that driver. You have no idea. You like, I had to write reports if like my bus had like a transmission fluid leak, so that, you know, there could be an environmental impact, you know, to determine if we accidentally contaminated the local water supply or something, because, you know, the bus had a mechanical problem. That so I mean, like, so anyways, that's just, so So that's just the funny thing. So, like, I no longer can watch, like, bus go, oh, no. So I'm always like, my poor bus driver has so much paperwork he has to do.
Well, that's what I like about writing, I guess, science fiction as well. And what we write is definitely not by any means hard science. And it's sort of more towards the fantasy side of it. So you kind of get that flexibility of being able to go, you know what, this is all tech jargon. We completely made it up. You know, it's all, you know, word salad.
Yes, that's kind of the fun of fantasy. Like, I do research stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, but I also don't have to have, like, historical accuracy or I don't have to worry about anachronisms or because it's my fantasy world.
Yeah. And so, well, we write about the future. So if people want to disagree with us about whether that's accurate or not, build your own time machine, go to the future and tell us we're wrong.
Yeah, fair enough. Those historical fiction people, they have it rough.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Oh yeah, you gotta get your details right, or you will be crucified by your fans.
It's true. I've actually been seeing a few things on TV and stuff with period pieces and stuff, and what I find quite interesting is they all seem to have a creative outlet where they modify little bits. And so every single time you see a different series, they've modified certain things, but you can sort of pick out, oh, yeah, I know who those characters are. Just interesting the way they do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just interviewed a woman who writes Sherlock Holmes stuff. And she's apparently a Sherlockian scholar. So,
okay.
But, yeah, so it's like there's how many umpteenth iterations of Sherlock Holmes out there?
Yeah, well, that's true.
So... it's definitely that. Or I just saw a YouTube recommendation. It was like ranking every adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. And I was like, why is this in my recommendations? First off, but second off, there was a lot on her, like, because they have like a little picture list, like, of the tier list. You ever seen those? There was like, they looked like there was 30 or 40 adaptations that she was ranking in her thumbnail for the video. And I was like, wow. Because she had a little like screenshot of each one. I was like, oh my God, I did not know there was so much.
Pretty epic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so when did you guys both think you wanted to be authors?
So we actually we met in high school, and we started writing almost immediately, to be honest. We actually started working together initially on a comedy Futurama Red Dwarf kind of inspired film, and okay. After about hours and hours of trying to film it all and then coming down to about 2 minutes of actual real footage, we decided to keep some of the idea and turn it into a more of a book. And as it's grown, it's changed totally from a comedy to quite a serious science fiction piece. So
I seem to remember it actually started much earlier than that. I remember being in maths class with you and we wrote a book called How to Waste Time in Maths.
That seems like a worthwhile endeavor.
Oh, it was.
In your math class.
The teacher loved it.
Oh, that's nice. At least your teacher had a sense of humor.
But she didn't let us sit together after that.
Oh, yeah.
No. So she had a sense of humor, but not that much of a sense of humor. Didn't want to see it continue, you know?
Yeah, fair. That's fair. I was terrible. I did terrible at math. Like, I missed, I was really sick. And I missed trigonometry, like how sine, cosine, and tangent worked. And I never managed to pick it up because, like, they were already past it. And I just never picked it up. And so I just did terrible in my last year at math that I was required to take in high school.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so I still don't. Yeah, so it's like I got to there, and then that was that. I was, like, I missed that week where she taught trigonometry in it, and I never caught up and I didn't really care either. So, I mean, I scraped by with, like, a passing grade, so it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a shame that there's not some sort of technological device that you can carry in your pocket everywhere with you that would do things like basic maths.
Yeah, well, we had the calculator. I didn't honestly know, like, how you were supposed to ever use it. So, like, I didn't even know, like, the concept of when I should be using which one is kind of the problem. So it's like it didn't matter because I didn't know how, like, I didn't know which button on my calculator to push to solve the equation, as I recall. Anyways, it's been like 23 years since that class. I was like 97, so what, 24 years? So.
Well, yeah, and now you can pretty much Google, right, whatever you want, and Google will actually do the answer. You know, like, you Google what's the square root of 6, and it will give you an answer, right?
Yeah. Google, I remember Google appeared in high school. We all switched to Google because we're like, we don't have to use Alta Vista anymore or Yahoo. We can use Google now. And we're all like, this is better.
You're showing your age now.
Yeah. Listen, when I was in high school, GeoCities webpages were like a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a GeoCities webpage.
I did too, with my friend.
Yep, that was my first website.
Yeah,
loved it.
So, what are you guys working on next?
As Steve mentioned earlier, the book's it's a series. It's a long running project that we've been working on for a while, and we'll probably continue to work on for some time. We've released 3 books in this series so far, and we're currently working on the 4th installment, which we're hoping should be out before the end of the year.
Awesome. Well, that sounds great. And where can our listeners find you out there on the internet so they can connect with you?
Probably the best place is historyofsoul.com. Which has links to all of our social medias. You can also buy our first book on Amazon, and the second 2 will be joining it. And I just want to put a plug out there as well. We are currently working with Zach on audio narration as well.
Zach Johnson?
That's the one.
Yeah, he did my Storm Below series.
Yeah. We've heard him a few times.
He is amazing.
Do some work with you guys. Fantastic voice. We had to snatch him up as well for our own works.
Yeah. He did that, and he's done like some of the Michael Evan and stuff I've co-written. Awesome. Well, you guys are going to be satisfied. He's a really amazing narrator. So it was really great talking with you, Chris and Steven.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun.
It was. You have, I guess it's a good morning since you're in Australia.
It is. Yep. Yeah. Just before lunch. So going to go get a bite to eat.
It's
meat pie, sausage roll, tomato sauce.
That sounds all really we Aussies good. Eat. I'm about to eat. I'm about to have dinner myself. So you have a good one.
Cool. Thank you. You too. See ya.
Thanks again. Bye.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.